This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Enterprise. This is Audrey Raj. With me in the studio is, of course,
Rita Liu. We're doing a tag team, but I'm mostly tagging Audrey.
Yeah, we're continuing to bring you news and analysis following the resignation of Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin as the country's prime minister. In a few minutes, we will have Professor Jeffrey Williams, economist at Malaysia University and of Science and Technology, on the line with us. And we're going to be talking to him about, you know, how does months of political turmoil impact our economy? Also, the idea of hiring talent outside politics and parliament to govern, you know, during this time. And of course, you know, it's budget season. What do we want to see table in the budget that will help economic recovery, right?
Who's tabling it?
Yes, that's the other question as well. But later on at 12 on Enterprise Biz Bytes today, we are asking you.
We're asking the question, what kind of leader does Malaysia need right now? So yeah, let us know. Instagram, Twitter, at BFM Radio, WhatsApp 018-789-8899.
Right. For now, we are going to give you a little bit of the Cranberries with Promises. And we'll have Professor Jeff on the line with us in just a few minutes. You're listening to Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Banish feudal mentality. BFM 89.9, the business station.
That was the Cranberries with Promises. You're listening to Enterprise with Frida Liu and Audrey Raj. And we are continuing to bring you news and analysis following the resignation of Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin as the country's prime minister. We also have on the line with us right now, for the second time this week, Professor Jeffrey Williams, economist at Malaysia University of Science and Technology. Professor, thank you for joining us again.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing good. How are you today?
Very, very well. Thank you. Nice to speak to you again.
So, Professor, let's just start with the disruption to the economy. Now, how does months of political turmoil impact our economy?
Well, we know that we've had to suffer from three different types of problem, haven't we, here in Malaysia? We've had the virus. We've had the political turmoil and we've had the economic consequences of that. And we know actually it's not a chicken and egg situation, is it? Because we know the progression of that. I mean, the virus came beginning of last year, but it was sort of under control as it was emerging. The health ministry was putting in place responses to it. But then, of course, we had the Sheraton move and we had a change in the government. Right. And then we remember, because it's been a long time, hasn't it? You know, I mean, we remember things such as the tablet cluster and the church cluster and the wedding cluster. All of those things that happened at the beginning were a consequence of the policy vacuum that happened around that Sheraton move period, right? And we had lots of mass gatherings going on there. And then that was the start of the upturn in the number of cases. Immediately after that, of course, we started to have the response to that, the policy response to that, which was the lockdown. And then the lockdown is what causes the harm to the economy. And over the period of since then, of course, there has been continuing political problems. And in Malaysia, which is different to other countries in the world, we've had very long extended lockdown.
Right.
And the World Health Organization doesn't advise this, actually, because they say, firstly, it doesn't help so much in terms of controlling the spread of the virus. Right. They prefer short and sharp lockdowns. And secondly, of course, it causes a lot of social and economic costs. Now, it's likely that if we had a more stable political environment, we'd have had a different discussion on management of the virus, and that might have been less geared toward just looking at lockdowns and perhaps looking at some of the many other alternatives that are on the table. And many medical experts have suggested, you know, find, test, trace, isolate, treat type things. We would have more investment in that. So the political turmoil, unfortunately, has taken all of that discussion away, which has been quite sad. And that's made the economic impact bigger than it might have been otherwise.
Right. And you know, Professor, what about foreign possession? How does this impact markets and investor sentiments?
Well, of course, foreign investors are affected by the virus themselves. Of course, whatever country they're in, everybody's been affected by this. And so it would have had an effect anyway. But of course, because of the political instability here in Malaysia and the policy response to that, I think foreign investors have been more cautious. Now, of course, there are two types of foreign investors we're interested in. One of the financial market investors, investing in the stock market and the foreign exchange markets, of course. And then, of course, there's the long-term FDI-type investors that we were trying to attract in order to build factories and businesses and then create jobs in the longer-term real investment, if you like. Now, for the first group, the financial market investors, of course, they will just steer clear of Malaysia because there's just too much uncertainty adding to the whole COVID scenario. And I think for the foreign direct investors, they will be holding off, is probably the better term. They're sort of holding off, waiting for things to settle down before they come and start making long-term investments. And the problem with that for the foreign direct investors is that during that period when they're holding off coming to Malaysia, waiting for things to settle down, unfortunately, they might find other options in other countries where they have a quick look, for example, at Vietnam or a quick look at Indonesia, and they say, well, actually, it's more stable there.
Right.
I might as well just hop over and put it there. So we might lose some of those things during this period. But, I mean, that's one of the challenges the government's going to have to face, which is to try to reinvigorate that. Because there's been a long-term trend, actually, since 2015 in net foreign direct investment in Malaysia. So it's not just a COVID issue. But, unfortunately, the COVID impact could make that more difficult, more structural.
Right.
So, Professor, can we talk about baggage? You know, what were some of the biggest financial and economical challenges faced by the previous government that were not addressed?
Which previous government?
The one that just finished. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, prior to the COVID crisis, prior to the Sheraton move, the PH government were dealing with what one might consider just to be normal day-to-day economic issues. And these were related to what we were just mentioning, foreign direct investment, encouraging foreign direct investment, for example, dealing with government debt, for example, and then trying to deal with normal issues of budgeting and which are the best areas to invest and to spend.
Right.
But during this COVID period, I mean, even former Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin has said in his remarks just yesterday, he said, well, the whole of his period has been COVID. So all of these financial and economic challenges have been overlooked because of the complete focus on COVID. But now what we're seeing, you see, because of the impact of the crisis, is some of those things that were sort of hidden. We sort of knew, but they were hidden. And now they're really, really critical. For example, the lack of a social welfare infrastructure. And how people, whenever there's a crisis, how quickly so many people run out of resources and are really in a very difficult situation. So the government has to resort to handouts and even food parcels. And that's an absence of a social welfare infrastructure.
Right.
The issue with pensions, of course, the EPF withdrawal, and how many people had so little in their EPF. And then when they're given this opportunity to withdraw it, how many people now, 6.3 million, have nothing in their pension account, 9 million have nothing in their saving account in EPF. And that's a big issue they need to be, fix again. Of course, in health, many people have looked at the health system, and now we're seeing how underfunded the health system has been. And it's not just a matter of underfunding, but it's also a question of management of the health system. These are very long-term issues. These have become very critical. And of course, in my own area in education, we are seeing very many of the universities in particular, some of the private universities in particular, having been very seriously affected by the impact of the of the pandemic. And we had already signaled before that they were in very difficult circumstances. And, well, we know what happened, the consequence of that. So many of these things which we sort of knew about, what were sort of hidden, have become very acute now. And so the new government is going to have to deal with these things. Of course, the priority for the new government is going to be opening up the economy and helping people with cash flows and helping SMEs reopen and helping people get back to work and all that. That's an immediate priority. But the new government in the longer term is still has to deal with these structural issues, which are very many.
Right. You know, with political instability now in a fairly common occurrence, unfortunately, in Malaysia, are there policies that can protect the economy from these sudden shifts and changes?
There are, actually. And there are some sort of quite fundamental issues. For example, simply having the government do less in the economy. I mean, this is quite a, it's a sort of fundamental balance between whether you have a freer market economy or whether you have a more government interventionist type economy. Malaysia does has a very large amount of government intervention in the economy. And so if the government were less involved in the economy, then actually things could, the private sector could manage more of its affairs more effectively. But then there are some institutional issues. For example, the role of Bank Negara. Bank Negara is actually quite independent in terms of the statute, the Bank Negara Act. It gives Bank Negara a lot of independence in terms of what it can do, setting interest rates and monetary policy, for example. And the other part, of course, is financial regulation and financial stability. It's one of the reasons they've been quite concerned about the loan moratorium, because it's their job actually to look after the loan side of things. And if they are independent of the government, they are not seen as an arm of the government. And so they can set the policy as is required by the economic circumstances rather than set the policy as required by the government. And so those sort of institutional changes can be put in place, but they are really very fundamental and very structural, actually. And although we have these regulatory and statutory independent systems in place, independence is actually a state of mind. So even though the Bank Negara Act says that Bank Negara is independent, the truth is that the reality of the situation is that it's not, because it's under the auspices of the finance ministry. So that's a different approach.
Yeah. So, Professor, would it be fair to say that you are for the idea of hiring talent outside politics, outside parliament to govern, you know, new faces with real-world experience?
Well, I should say that my experience of working with civil servants in Putrajaya is that there is a lot of talent inside the civil service. I mean, I think they're great, actually, many of them. But, you know, the thing is, there is a structure. It's a very hierarchical structure. It's a very bureaucratic structure. It's a very paternalistic structure. And I think a lot of the people who are the most talented people don't really have the opportunity to express themselves and to use their talent. So I think actually if you were to reform the management of the civil service, you could get a lot of talent already there. And I think, of course, there are always areas where the civil service wouldn't have expertise in particular, particular things. Then outside help is always very useful. But I think it must be open and transparent. And you really must get people who know about public policy challenges, not just people who come from the corporate sector and expect that the public policy environment would be the same as the corporate sector, because it isn't. Actually, your stakeholders are different. You know, you're not trying to address customers or shareholders. You're actually trying to address members of the general population, members of the general public. So the public policy challenges are different. So there is a balance that has to be struck. But I think it's much better, isn't it? Everybody would agree it's much better to have a diversity of approaches and a diversity of views in anything that we do. And I think that balancing the talent inside the civil service with talent from outside is a good thing, provided it's transparency in that process.
We'll talk a little bit more about transparency a little later, but not all eyes are on the budget for the economy to recover. What do we want to see tabled in the budget, Professor?
Well, I think that between now and the budget, the two priorities are first to end the lockdown as quickly as we can in a way that's safe, of course, because we're all very concerned about it being safe. And then providing people with some liquidity and some opportunity to actually go out into the economy to spend a little bit, helping SMEs also to pay some of their debts, given a recovery grant, as they are doing in Sarawak, for example. The government of Sarawak is giving a 10,000 ringgit recovery grant to SMEs, and I think that's a great idea, actually, because they would just get the grant and spend it on what they think is necessary for their business, and that's a good thing. It wouldn't cost that much, actually, if you were to do it across the country as a whole. It would only cost about 9 or 10 billion ringgit, so that would be quite a good idea. But in terms of, I mean, I think that should be something that should happen very quickly, even before the budget. But in terms of what we want for the budget, we need to be putting in place policies that will help people to rebuild, help firms to rebuild, companies, SMEs, because these are the guys who are employing people. And the best way to help people is to get them back in employment. All those guys who lost their jobs and they're going into the underemployment group, they're still working, but their salaries are much lower. Getting them back into work is a very important part of what the budget needs to look at. But also helping to address some of those issues I mentioned before. The social welfare infrastructure, the pensions, the healthcare system, the education system as well. Those things are, they're always priorities in the budget, of course. But in the past, it's just been a matter of allocating the budget and allowing it to be managed in the same old way. I think what's important now is to make the allocation, but have the allocation as part of a reform process. And a reform process in the context of what we call a social market economy, where there is a relationship between the government and the private sector in order to deliver on economic growth and business success, but also to deliver on the social aspect, which might otherwise be left behind.
Right. Now, coming back to transparency, Professor, Perikatan Nasional was often called paternalistic for employing a top-down approach when communicating with the people. How can the new government be more inclusive of people, you know, from all segments to bridge that disconnect?
I think they just have to open up a little bit, invite more people into the discussion groups and just discussion forums, but do so in a proactive way. I know that, I mean, I've seen a lot of these, for example, I see a lot of business chambers telling me, oh, we went to a meeting with the Prime Minister, we went to a meeting with Mitty, we went to a meeting with somebody else. But it appears to me that they're just there as sort of information episodes rather than proper discussion episodes where you're actively engaged in helping to design and change policies. So I think involving people much more in that type of thing, I mean actively involving people in the design and change of policy, will be good. I think we need more economic forecasts because I think that what we've seen during the current period is that the government is relying on too few economic forecasters, primarily the Bank Negara and the World Bank. And the problem is their forecasts have been very optimistic and very positive. And if you have a very optimistic and a very positive forecast on economic growth, it often leads you to choose a policy, for example, like lockdown, and say, well, we can afford the lockdown because the World Bank or the Bank Negara is telling us the economy is going to grow. And that's actually the wrong type of policy choice. Whereas if you have a different group of economic forecasters, they will tell you, you know, truth to power, if you like. You know, you have to be independent and tell truth to power and say, if you lock down the economy, you are going to have a very significant downturn. And unfortunately, we didn't really see too many of that of those types of economic forecasters, which includes myself and my colleague, Paolo Casadio, for example, we would thank this very much. And we just weren't involved sufficiently in that discussion. And I think if we had been involved more in that discussion, we would have had some different policies and different outcomes.
Right. Professor, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. It's always a pleasure.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much.
That was Professor Jeffrey Williams, economist at Malaysia University of Science and Technology. Yeah, some really interesting points there, especially that last part about the economic forecast. You know, the more sobering they are, you know, they help you reflect on reality.
Right? I mean, rather than point this this picture, right? And I think you want the facts, you want the reality, and then we can work on the reality and make, you know, realistic goals and whatever, what have you, right? Yeah. So, yes, this whole day we're going to be talking, well, this whole day until Enterprise Biz Bytes will be discussing what kind of leader does Malaysia need right now. Of course, that's happening after the news at noon. Let us know via Twitter and Instagram. That's at BFM Radio. Also on WhatsApp 018-789-8899.
For now, here's Whitesnake with Here I Go Again. Here I Go Again. You're listening to Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.